So, Mary, it's 2000. Looking back to 1982 when you founded Eagle, what did you think the education landscape would look like in 2010?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I don't forecast ahead. Mm-hmm. I just deal with the day-to-day problems. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't even thinking about it. All I knew is that what my kids were getting, whatever we did had to be better. Mm-hmm. And, we had hopes that if we could get together something that was a good program, maybe the school district would take a look and adopt it. Mm-hmm. But we realized that was very naive. Mm-hmm.
So given your experiences from 1982 through today, what's been different about how it played out? You mentioned, you thought that it would affect the public schools. Mm-hmm. So what has changed in terms of your expectations vis-a-vis Eagle and, let's see, other schools?
Well, I think that I'm now on the advisory committee for the TAG program in the district. And some of the discussions they're having are exactly what were happening 26, 27, 28 years ago. In fact, if anything, things are worse because of No Child Left Behind, because of there aren't as many innovative programs in the district. They're more concerned now with testing at all times. In the past, they weren't testing at all, and now, if anything, they're teaching too much to the test. So I can't say that it's progressed, at least in the public mm-hmm. schools, from where it was then. Then they actually had some cluster programs. Mm-hmm. Hopefully with the new superintendent, there is a new direction. But we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So given all that, so why do you think this nothing really changed? Or maybe it got worse?
Listening to what people were discussing is the same things that mm-hmm. were being discussed 26 years ago, the mm-hmm. same problems.
Right.
Principals, teachers not being on board. But now there's more regulation and restrictions on teachers as to what they can do mm-hmm. because they have to meet the standards of the test. And so they're looking, again, more at children that need help going forward mm-hmm. rather than kids who are at the upper end.
Hmm. So given that, if we have this conversation in 2020 or 2020, will it be the same? Or will it be worse or better?
I have no idea. Our board of directors would say to me about, well, do you have a 5-year plan, a 7-year mm-hmm. plan? And I never did. Mm-hmm. What I would do is to adapt to whatever the problems or the needs were of the kids and our staff. Mm-hmm. And that was my plan. Mm-hmm. I would point out that the Russians always had 5 and 7 and 10 year plans, and we saw what happened to them.
Yes.
So I'm not going to prognosticate.
Okay. So compared to 1982, there seems to be a lot more online learning opportunities for kids. I mean, I remember when I was a college student in 1982, I'd have to go to the library and get the books, and somebody else would check it out and I wouldn't get it. And, but today there's just tremendous amounts of data out there for kids and online courses. So how does that affect the opportunities, the schools, the parents, the whole thing?
Well, I think there are more opportunities than there used to be. It's certainly a lot more information. Now, whether or not that information is correct
right.
is something else again. We should always be teaching kids critical thinking mm-hmm. skills and to separate the wheat from the chaff. Mm-hmm. When even some of our kids, because we would go through geometry, and independent learning with the second year of algebra, but some of our kids even got as close as pre-calc. Mm-hmm. They would have to take an online learning course. The only problem that I see with online learning, it's not the best, because you really want a classroom situation where you can discuss it more mm-hmm. and interact with each other, and that's mm-hmm. why we started a school for for the kids so that they could be with each other. I guess more and more things are being done so they can interact with Skype and things like
right.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the greatest detriment to online learning, is you don't get the personal interaction. Because when you get these kids together and they feed off each other and there's an excitement, which you don't get if you're just doing it alone.
Mm-hmm. But do the availability of those kinds of classes offer more opportunities for public and private schools? You know, let's say they're either cash restrained or ideologically restrained or what have you, you know, to give kids more academic options. Is that maybe the only way out, or you know, what's your sense of this online world?
Well, I think it's certainly a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
certainly, especially for people who are in communities where there aren't a lot of resources out mm-hmm. in the rural areas mm-hmm. and what have you. But my only concern about it is that you don't have the interaction that you'd like to see.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you're doing science, you really need a lab.
Right.
But for other things, you can probably use it.
So how about cooperation with other organizations? You know, you sort of alluded to that, and that your hope was that maybe the founding and growth of Eagle would affect or maybe merge or have some effect on the public schools. You know, do you see the opportunities for those kinds of cooperations growing or declining, or they just aren't there, or you know, what are you seeing? I'm thinking about Wickedy too, that kind of stuff.
Well, we did a lot with Wickedy. Mm-hmm. A lot of our kids went to Wickedy.
Mm-hmm.
With public schools, we were always open, but there is a restraint in that you then have to follow their rules, and I was never one for following a lot of rules.
Mm-hmm.
So you give up a certain autonomy mm-hmm. if you. People had asked us if we wanted to be a charter school. And at first we thought we wouldn't mind being part of the public system, but there's just too much bureaucracy involved, too many
mm-hmm.
rules that don't seem to make sense.
Right. Right.
And so we have had mainly Edgewood students who come through for student teaching mm-hmm. or to observe, and that's fine. But and we do it with the University of Wisconsin. But I think a really close relationship with the public schools, unless we were given autonomy, I don't see happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So again, thinking back over 28 years, how has the student population changed in that time in terms of their incoming abilities, academic expectations, their performance, or has it not? And then also the parents.
Well, I would say the student background has changed. When we're getting children coming in later on, in the last few years, their math ability is very bad. Their mm-hmm. math preparation is really bad.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be they didn't get concepts, or they weren't taught concepts. They were taught computation. Now they don't seem to have either.
Mm-hmm.
And we, in fact, just before I left, we had to put some children back in math, which we had never had to do before. So I don't know exactly what the public system's using. I think it's Discovery Math or something
those
like that.
Those kinds of things, yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't give them enough background.
Mm-hmm.
They ask them to do too much with too little information.
Mm-hmm. How about the parents? Have you seen changes in the parents and their, you know, role with the kids and their interaction with the schools over the last 28 years? What's different or new about that?
Well, of course, when we first started, we were just a, I don't know if you call it experimental, but we certainly didn't have a reputation at that point. So the parents that we got were desperate.
Mm-hmm.
We have a good reputation. They're not. It's much more accepted to go to the school.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that they've changed that much. We don't get parents who say my child. We don't normally get parents who say my child's a genius. What they say is my child seems to need more, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's typical for the parents that we get.
How about teachers? There was an interview I put on the school blog last week with Deborah Gist, who's superintendent of schools in Rhode Island, former teacher, who said that the ed schools now get the bottom third of the students in general, you know, in terms of their academic performance. What are you seeing in terms of teacher?
Well, okay. We always hired a little differently. Mm-hmm. We like to see not just an education background. Our preferred was, especially for the upper level in the middle school, that the person have maybe a BA in history and then a master's in teaching and with experience. When we started, there was nothing in terms of teaching languages at the elementary school, so we were more likely to find people who had some education background but also were fluent in the language. Now that you find that more, same thing with computers, there wasn't anything right. like that. And so we had sort of non-traditional teachers. But our main thing was that they knew their subject and they could teach.
So content knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and ability to teach.
Right. Okay. So what about school leadership? You know, both at the principal and the, let's say, the, in your case, the board level. What's different about 1982 versus 2010 in terms of what a good principal or good school leadership needs today versus then, or is there anything different?
I had trouble with term school leadership.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds sort of, I don't know, business-like.
Yeah.
I still refer to the library rather than the LMC.
Well, that's fine.
I think in public schools, it certainly is far more difficult. You've got a lot more to contend with in terms of discipline, in terms of drugs coming in, even at elementary school and middle school level. In our situation, I was treasurer of the board and Betty was president, so we had no problem with school leadership
because right.
we were it. And I think the bigger the schools are, it's harder. Not only do you have more problems, but you can't interact with the parents and the students as well, and I think that's the key. I know over at East High, Milt McPike, who had been the principal there, was well-loved by everybody because he was there and he was active and the kids could relate to him. Plus, he was big, you know,
yeah,
so they weren't
going
to give him a lot of trouble. But I do think it's very difficult now. And you've in the public schools, you've got so many... If you don't do this, and if you don't do that, everybody, whatever you do, it's not going to be right. And actually, that's somewhat true in the private schools, too. I mean, you have to take stands and be firm and say, yes, we would like to accommodate your child, but if it's to the detriment of the rest of the class, we're not going to do it.
Right.
And you get static from both staff and parents, but you have to do what you feel is right.
So how should school governance, school leadership, you know, boards, principals, however you want to refer to it, how should they communicate with parents these days and how often? You know, is it just the website? Is it newsletters, hard copies, email? Is it blogs? You know, what frequency?
I'm old-fashioned. I like newsletters, but they do get lost. So I think you need to do it twice, which is what we do. We send it home with the kids and also on the website at the Internet. And I think this should be at least weekly,
okay.
which is what we decided in the very beginning, because it you need to keep that communication open, that we have a requirement that the parents put in a certain amount of volunteer time. Not only does it help the school, but the kids see that you value it.
Right, you're invested.
You are invested, you value, and you also see what's going on in the school, so when you hear rumors, you know they're not true, or you feel comfortable coming and asking, because more often than not, whatever the parking lot rumor is not correct.
So if we said, let's start Eagle today, let's start another, you know, Madison needs a private high school or another private school or whatever, how would it be different, and would you do it?
I'm too old.
Let's say that, you know,
okay,
we've got young kids.
How would you do it? In the past, first of all, you had a lot of schools that were closing, so there was room. We started out at the Regent on Regent Street.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a closed school. It was managed by a separate company. We were able to rent space. Mm-hmm. Actually, we were originally talking about renting space at Midvale School because mm-hmm. they had a lot of extra classrooms. But and the principal was very open to it. But she was then informed that would be an insult to their teachers, which we didn't see at all. But
right.
So we rented space. And we started with 12 students, eight teachers part-time, paid $5 an hour. At that time, there was no definition of a school in the state. It was a working definition was six kids. Wisconsin's pretty loose. I'm not sure what it requires legally now, but it's a pretty loose community. They're very much positive about homeschooling and about starting private schools. We started with $2,000. I think you'd need a lot more now.
I think so.
We got our materials, well, our furniture and things from the UW surplus. And we started. It is hard. You have to do it the first 5 years. If you can make that, then you're doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to sort of juggle things to get a building, our first building. Fortunately, one of our parents was a developer, and he sort of showed us how to do this little magic trick. Mm-hmm. Somehow you had money. and then if you continue to give a good education, and I handled the money, so I was very careful with money, and we always turned, we were never in debt. We paid that first off, and the first $2,000 off the first year. Of course, that meant that Betty and I didn't work for anything, and
right.
we paid tuition for our kids, it still got going.
That's how startups are.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So how did you end up here in Fitchburg?
Well, we were on what is now After School Inc.'s mm-hmm. building. We were not able to have any, we really couldn't expand mm-hmm. in that spot. There was a lot of traffic there too, which concerned us. We didn't have a good playground. Mm-hmm. And it was getting, we had quite a few people on the waiting list, and we couldn't grow where we were. Betty went looking for property. She tended to do these things, and then I had to figure out how to pay for it. And that particular piece of property in Fitchburg was originally offered to the school district
right.
for what is now Wright Middle School.
Exactly.
They didn't want it.
Madison Middle School 2000, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. They did not want it, mm-hmm. so it's a beautiful piece of land.
Yes.
And we said, okay. We were able to sell our building to After School, mm-hmm. which helped us then pay
sure.
for the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's sort of a shell game.
Right.
But
yes.
we've paid off about 3/4 of the mortgage.
Wow.
So
great.
That's always been my thing, is get that mortgage paid
that's
off.
Right. That's yeah. right. It gives you flexibility. Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yes. Let's talk about parents briefly.
Okay.
What should they know?
About what?
Well, they're having kids. What should they know about their kids' education? What should they, you know, you're a parent.
Yes.
You've run a school, created a school, run a school. So what should they know? I mean, what?
Well, they should
know about where their kids go to school. What they learn.
Yes, they certainly should. They should take a look at the textbooks.
Mm-hmm.
They should meet the teachers, if at all possible. They should help. Certainly when they're younger, help out in the classroom, because mm-hmm. then you really get to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
They should know the people that are in charge of the school, and they should know what their options are. It's mm-hmm. not always one spot.
Mm-hmm.
What may be a good school for one child may not necessarily be a good school for another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's too big, they might need a smaller school. Mm-hmm. If it's too small, they might need a larger school. And it'll vary with the ages too.
Mm-hmm.
When kids get to middle school, they don't want to see their parents in the classroom, but they can still help out in the library or something else. So mm-hmm. they get a feel for the school.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the most important, is to really be involved in the education.
Okay. You seem to be talking about a small percentage of parents, generally, from my experience.
That could be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
It's unfortunate, yes.
Because those are the parents who will be in the know and will get the best for their child.
Sure.
They'll know which teacher to ask for, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. So then what about kids? You know, what should kids learn today? I mean, how has that changed at Eagle from 1982 to 2000, or has it? You know, is it still the core subjects and then, you know, or is it language immersion more important now? Or, you know, what should kids learn?
Well, we always taught languages from kindergarten. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They have a choice of French or Spanish. Mm-hmm. Languages are extremely important. Mm-hmm. And hopefully our kids, if they're at all good language learners, they come out pretty proficient mm-hmm. and go into third and fourth year of that language in high school. Mm-hmm. What we always taught is critical thinking skills, because it doesn't matter where you are or what you're doing, you need to be able to analyze and to think logically and critically. You can't teach, well, they claim you can teach creativity. You can encourage creativity and allow kids, these are your parameters, this is the knowledge you should have, now create something and give them that flexibility. And that really helps all kinds of learners. I don't think there's enough done in terms of hands-on learning in a lot of schools, and kids sort of tune out. Mm-hmm. They have to really be engaged. The other thing they need to be taught is what they call metacognition. They need to know how they learn. If they're an auditory learner, or they're a visual learner, or they're a kinetic learner, they need to figure out what it is the best way for them to learn, and then adapt whatever is going on to that learning style. So critical thinking, they know their own learning style and do it. And then they have to learn how to be respectful advocates for themselves, to work whatever system there is, to acknowledge the system, to respect it, and then to use it. We once had a student come back for our alumni panel who was a senior, I think, at Memorial, who said that he could get anything he wanted to, any course he wanted to at Memorial. First they would tell him no, and then he'd show them how to do it. He went to Harvard, was part of some large student protest about, I forget what, and is now in law school. But being a self-advocate in a respectful way is probably one of the best things they can learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. How about college? You know, is it essential today? Is an undergrad just a stepping stone? You know, what? So you've seen all these kids, and you see them, as you mentioned, go on and go to college and do other things. You know, what should they do in college? What should they take?
Well, it's going to vary from kid to kid.
Sure.
I've always been an advocate of the basic liberal arts curriculum in terms of teaching critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And you can adapt from there. Others, you know, if they've always wanted to be an architect, we've had those, that's what they're going to do.
Right.
Some are good in a lot of things, which is really a problem for bright kids. They're good in so many things, and all those teachers want them in their field. Mm-hmm. And I would recommend that they not limit themselves right away, that they take a wide range of courses, and then from there choose what field they want to go into. I know many people would say pick the best professors. Pick the really good teachers, because you're going to learn the most. Especially true, I think, for kids who have to have a personal touch. Not all kids do, but some do, and they will not perform without that. If they pick a bad professor, they're in deep trouble, because it doesn't matter how bright they are, they'll tune out. I guess that's all I'd say. And look around. Don't limit yourself.
So you're advocating generalism, a generalist approach in undergrad, a liberal arts generalist approach.
Basically. Well, that's my background.
In general, yeah.
It's not going to be true for some kids, because if they know where they want to go and that's their field, that's probably what they're going to do. For those who aren't sure, I'd say take a variety mm-hmm. and go from there.
Okay. Okay. After all that, should we have K-12? Should it be K-8? K-10? You mentioned a student who, you know, didn't fit into the traditional assembly line high school model or quasi-assembly line model, going off to a hybrid high school college environment.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine gives me old textbooks and quizzes from 100 years ago and shows us what 13, 14-year-olds were doing that, or, you know, the ones that were in good schools. You know, is the K-12 model an anachronism? Is it, you know, do we need to rethink that and give kids different opportunities, or, you know, what's your sense of that?
Well, I think whatever the model is, it's got to be flexible to meet the mm-hmm. needs of the kids. Some kids, they may intellectually be able to go to college, but emotionally, mm-hmm. Socially, they're not there. And so if you can give through virtual learning or whatever, give them the academics they need, but still give them a chance to grow up before throwing mm-hmm. them in a college setting. There are some specific schools for early entrance. I think it's Bard College, it's Slippery Rock, I believe. University of Chicago used to let kids in early. It's going to vary with the child. I think if your model is flexible and you're open to suggestions, that's the best. I don't think anything is wedded in stone. At this point, everything's set up for K-12. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, it's serve most people well. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't change it, but I would make it more flexible.
Finally, what should the public schools be doing? You know, you mentioned your early vision of, you know, Eagle being folded in or some relationship with the public schools. Today, there's certainly at a national level, there's a lot of rhetoric about charters and other models. Mm-hmm. And yet, as you pointed out, you know, when you actually look at that in some detail, there's a lot of rules and a lot of other things that come along with that, and, you know, maybe it's not such a hot deal. So what should the public schools, what should we do as a society?
Well, flexibility.
Flexibility, yeah.
And higher expectations of kids. Mm-hmm. I've been doing some tutoring in after-school center and some other things, and they're not even at middle school level. They're not expecting kids to give them any homework, mm-hmm. which I find appalling. Mm-hmm. Yes, they are involved with each other and all this, but at 13, mm-hmm. their mind is really good.
Sure.
And I think a lot more can be expected of kids. Mm-hmm. And I don't care where they're from mm-hmm. or what their background is. If their background is such that they need more, then they should be getting more, and mm-hmm. They should be doing more at home. The inflexibility of many schools is unfortunate. I think they need to do cluster grouping. Mm-hmm. I think they need to be flexible in terms of, okay, here's a group that's do a lot more pre-testing to see what kids know, and then teach to what's not known and give those kids who've already got it something else to do in a cluster. Mm-hmm. And keep reforming those groups, because a lot of bright kids may miss things. They tune out because they're mm-hmm. bored.
Right.
Or they've jumped in their knowledge, but they missed a little something on the way. Mm-hmm. So I think pre-screening before you teach a unit, flexibility in grouping. There's a lot of things that can be done that don't require any money, mm-hmm. but just attitude.
Sure, exactly. It's leadership, yeah.
Well, yeah.
So is it possible within public schools? I mean, given your experiences, can these things occur? Or is it simply finding the right teacher who is willing to buck the system, or the right principal, and then it happens, or, you know, that insider knowledge, let's say.
Oh, they can occur. They occur in many school systems.
Mm-hmm.
They occur in parts of Madison, mm-hmm. but There is unfortunately a mentality where people who've tried to buck the system have been beaten down,
right.
And so they then naysay anyone else doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. You do that for a while, and you get to be a naysayer. Mm-hmm. We tried that before. It never worked. Well, and I found near the end of my career, I did a little of that myself. And that doesn't mean it can't work with someone else.
Right. Thank you, Mary.
Okay.